the studio this morning, I have Darren Millington and Megan Baird of Urban Abundance and Whole Health Hinimoa, who are here in Auckland City working with localised gardens. They are a growing number of people who are showing the way of how we can build community gardens, grow and eat healthily, and model ways in which we can cooperate and mutually work to a more cohesive understanding of goodwill and community. So, kia ora, Megan and Darren.
Kia ora.
Hi.
Megan, what took you into community gardens and working with the land?
Oh my goodness. We could go back to when I was a child. About a year ago, we moved into a house in Birkenhead on the North Shore, and we met up with our landlords, Jeff and Linda Tish, and they're amazing people who wanted to create a big garden in the back section behind our rental, and they needed some help to do that. So it was serendipitous coming together of people, because that's what Darren and I do as a passion. So for the last year, we've been on a journey to be self-sufficient as much as we can in an urban setting and share the surplus with our neighbour.
And Darren, how did you come into it?
I guess I got started about 8-9 years ago now, when I, after working in factories for so long, it was soul-crushing work, that I decided to find something a bit better for myself. And after a bit of a road trip with some friends, living in Australia at the time, I was chuffing over to Northern New South Wales to hang out in some festivals for a little while, and ended up just meeting a few people over there. They're very much involved in permaculture and lots of organic gardening, and just really got inspired. And on the way home, one of those moments where I decided to give the old life a flick and jump both feet in and get into studying. I ended up doing a permaculture course on the weekends and studying full-time horticulture during the week and building up my skills and volunteering for basically just in exchange for a bit of work reference, working for a little nursery, and just really, really, really keen to keep on going, and ended up working for a friend here doing some local gardens around South Australia, then ended up working for an eco-village after this, and this is where I met Megan there, and basically just doing the landscaping for the prior to the first tenants moving in, or the first people moving into the village, and
a permacultural relationship blossomed.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
And we've got Urban Abundance, and we've also got Whole Health Hinimoa. Can you tell me, or tell the listeners, what these two names represent?
Well, the Whole Health Hinimoa, that involves Jeff and Linda Tish and Megan and myself developing the gardens in the backyard, and
it's our communal garden.
Yeah.
So we decided to give it a title, and Hinimoa Street is where our communal garden is, so, and we are moving towards whole health.
It's very true. Yeah, the Urban Abundance is a business that I have created. I wanted to make sure people are able to grow their own food in their backyards as well, and providing a service where I can help them, like, build the structures and give them the knowledge that I've picked up through the years and carry it on for themselves.
Well, I love gardening. I like getting out and I like working with soil. I like building up the soil, getting all the different manures. I love getting either cow manure or chicken manure or horse manure, and picking seaweed, getting seaweed off the beach. I collect it from a beach a long way from the city, so I'm bringing good seaweed into my compost, or picking up the leaves, going down the park in autumn, and all the oak trees and lime trees or elm trees, getting the leaves, taking it home. Do you do things like that?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Kindred spirit. Darren does exactly the same thing. He's a compost king. He can go on and on for hours.
Yeah, we've been, well, when I say we, Jeff goes down to the local cafe and gets all the coffee grounds from there every day, and all the old newspapers as well, and brings them back so we can use that for compost and snail deterrents around the property. And anyone who we see with a big chipper drawing past the house, we'll often flag them down and ask them to back up the driveway and drop a whole truckload of mulch down there for us that we can either compost with or make piles out of. And
Don't they see that as a resource, though? Or are you just able to con them to give you that incredible resource? Because
they've got to pay for it to take it somewhere else, and if we're offering a free place for them to dump it, they're going to jump on it.
They're really happy to.
Go on. I thought they were savvy enough to find a place, because everywhere in the cities you should have this compost or these chips around the base of all trees. The Australians do it very well now. they're really starting to mulch heavily around all their trees, I found in New South Wales anyway.
Well, if our mulching contractor is listening, please don't listen. Please just give it to us for free.
Very true. Yeah. Yes. So, gardening. I just love to be able to grow things. What are you growing in your gardens, and are there some tips that you can share?
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, we've got a good variety of stuff going on in the garden at the moment. I mean, we've just harvested all the daikon radish I wanted especially to make some kimchi out of. And we also get basically a lot of root vegetables, beetroots and turnips.
Carrots.
And carrots in abundance there, definitely.
With your carrots, a lot of people have difficulty with a sort of a contamination by an insect that gets in. And how do you eliminate that?
We don't seem to have had a problem so far.
Not so much. Well, I guess we're planting into a new gardens where those pests haven't built up yet as well. And I think a lot of the pest problems we're inhibiting through like preventative measures, through crop rotations, where the same family of plants don't stay in the same bed every year. They get about a 4-year spacing in between years. So that breaks the life cycle of the pest and the diseases and helps it.
And your beetroot. Do you have a lot of difficulty in getting them to really grow? You've got to be, they've got to be in a very moist soil, I find. Not sunshine, but moist all the time.
We had a fabulous crop last summer. This winter's crop wasn't so good. We direct sowed, and I think we may have done it too late, or we sowed too thickly because they didn't bulb.
Yeah, a lot of them didn't. They just laid down and sort of sulked there for a little while. But
you're always learning. You're always learning.
I agree. And with the daikon, of course, the Japanese white radish that sometimes grows to nearly half a metre and it has huge, as round as a beer bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah, not ours. But especially going for like the smaller growing varieties, so it's they work in a quicker succession, so we can eat them a bit sooner.
And the history of the land, it's typical North Shore clay. Clay soil.
Fair enough, yeah.
So that's what we've started with. So it's a slow process to break that clay down and add that organic matter, the compost that we make on site. We're trying to do to enrich the soil using applications and composts that we make on site as much as possible. So it's going to be a much slower process than just digging out that clay and replacing it with something that you buy in.
Yeah.
So things like the radish won't grow as abundantly as if you stick it in some ready-made compost that you've bought from King's. But
do you use gypsum?
No, I haven't actually used gypsum, only because I'm trying to limit what we're actually buying for the garden as well. I mean, we don't want to make our expensive too expensive for ourselves to actually eat it. It's we're just cutting down the costs and doing as much as we can with what we've got.
Very good. And what are you growing now at the moment? Because we've got a full moon coming up very shortly, and I've always grown on full moons. Are you the same?
Yeah, we do very similar. I mean,
Darren's a wizard. Biodynamic wizard.
Well, I don't know if you can call it wizardry, but it's just a few practices that have known to happen with the full moon, bringing on the growth, like ramps it up quite a lot, as opposed to, say, on a new moon, where you don't get as much growth happening at that time, because all the energy is basically going back into the earth at that time, and as opposed to going out to the leaves and letting them reach the photosynthesis. And
So Darren's a bit of a taskmaster outside, and we can't sow seeds not on that particular day, although I like to argue, because in an urban setting where you're working full time, you don't have a lot of time to be mindful sometimes, and sometimes I just got to say to Darren, this is the only time I've got. Need to do it. So we have these arguments, and that's about communal gardening. You need to work
out the discussions.
Okay, the discussions. Communal gardening is about cooperation and collaboration. So we have constantly monthly meetings so that we can talk these issues out, and everyone's different perspectives are brought to the table, and we nut things out and we come to compromise. We have to. So it's a lot of planning in communal gardening. There's no autonomy. You've got to be willing to bend a little bit.
Absolutely, yeah. Accept other people's ideas as well, which is fantastic, because I learned from everyone else involved in this as well. And
we all bring our own strengths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as far as maybe we don't plant the seed always on the full moon, because I mean, any time's a good time to sow a seed. It's there may be a better time, but yeah.
We've just got to get those old diaries out, see when it's best for all four of us to be involved, because that's the best times when we all can all come together.
It's good working with a whole group of people in the garden, isn't it?
Oh,
It's interesting and it's very fulfilling.
Lightens the workload.
Yes.
Yeah, and it can be challenging as well.
Because I've found my organic gardening, and of course you're only working with organics, has altered to the degree that I used to dig everything over. And as a kid I used to use a shovel and spade, and then I moved over to a fork. And now, of course, the no-dig principles are really very interesting, because we find that when we turn over soil, we're exposing all the microorganisms to the sun, which instantly microwaves and kills off, just kills it all off.
And there's also the efforts, like all the biological activity, that once that's disturbed, you'll break the cycle a little bit. It's got to take a little time to repair after that as well. So nutrients and things like this will take a little time to reassociate themselves to the plants itself. And yeah, we go with a no dig and no step on sort of garden, so, to help out with that biology. And
we get the chickens in to do a bit of digging.
I see. Yeah. Yes. Well, they not only do the digging, they put a bit back as well.
Indeed.
Yes. Do you have gardens? Are they built higher up, or are they?
Yeah. Jeff, being a retired master carpenter, has all of these old building materials lying around that are just waiting to be used for something else. Yeah, he's made some boxing out of old
scaffolding planks.
They're, although treated, we've covered that with plastic to stop the leaching going into the soil, so our vegetables aren't contaminated. And
So it would, in one way, because we want an organic garden, to build these raised beds, it would have been the ideal to have, non-treated macrocarpa. There's another compromise there. We've got these materials already there, ready to go, so we use them. It's all that compromise in an urban setting as well. There's a constant compromise.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and one thing I do find as well is that any gardens around, any plant pots or whatsoever, they seem to harbour all the slugs and snails. I've also gone with a couple of gardens where I'm not using anything so much as just mounding up some soil, giving us one more growing space, because you don't have to, you can plant where the boards would normally be, and we're also making less habitat for little slugs and snails as well.
Which are having a bumper season at the moment with all this wetness. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So do you use beer, or do you use broken up eggshell, or how do you do
this? Beer seems to be the one at the moment, because I'm brewing my own beer and I made a flop beer.
Conveniently.
So we've got 23 litres of beer bait, snail bait waiting to be used up.
We've got slug killer.
Yeah, my slug killer stout, that one. It's
what's the pills in the Darren?
Was it?
Yeah.
What, about 17% or something like
that? Yeah, it was high strength. Well, the yeast failed.
Yeah.
And mulching. Mulching is such an important issue.
It is. Yeah, we basically use what we can get a hold of once again, using things like lawn clippings where we haven't got much else, so it could be oak leaves that we've been using in a few places, in the form of leaf mould after it's, we'll collect all the leaves up, all the oak leaves, and stash them up for a whole season, so about a year later you've got a nice mouldy rich mix there that you can just throw on as your mulch. It's generally inert, so it's got no seeds and for weeds to be harboured in.
And we do buy in a half-rotted down sawdust soil mix from Cypress Sawmills out in Dairy Flat. Really cheap if you go out and get it yourself.
Oh, absolutely. And it's good enough to plant straight into, I've found. We grew our chilies in it last season in tubs, and they did have a bit of a bumper crop out of that itself.
Yeah. And this year we're going to have big mounds of this mulch growing our pumpkins and rock melon, which do fabulously in our hot site.
I see. And you had your chilies in your tubs and you had a bumper crop. What was the key to that? Moisture?
Magic.
Sunlight?
Well, it could have been just the, the constant love and singing it gets sung to, and
good. Prince Charles speaks to his plants.
I'm a fan of Charlie. I'm a fan.
Me
too.
Good ideas.
Yes. And your melons, you had fantastic melons too?
We did. They were smaller than what you get from the supermarket. That's the usual. They were gorgeous in flavour, and we've never grown them before, and they just gave us so much joy because it was sweet fruit that wasn't on a tree. It was in beautiful plants that with smaller leaves that just so intricate and curly, and I recommend.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those things, like, it's always a treat, though, when we get these new things, like not having done it before, and suddenly we've got this rock melon, and the first one to ripen up, I think we sat around our garden table and shared it amongst the four of us and extended family as well at the time.
We have lots of celebrations.
Yeah, we always celebrate the harvest and make a bit of a communal meal out of it, or you really liven the place up a bit too.
Do you use cardboard, old clean cardboard?
Yes, for a few things. As a weed barrier under some of the garden beds, as well as newspaper as well for that matter, and feeding it to the worms, built up the fungal activity in the worm castings.
We found that newspaper didn't really stop the oxalis. We have a big problem with oxalis in the front garden, which isn't so much a productive garden, it's more ornamental. And that oxalis, hard to beat. We're just going to just keep ripping it out and giving it to the chickens for years and years and years until they just...
give up.
Give up and realise they're beat.
Yes, oxalis is a huge, huge one. That and kikuyu. Yes. Have you got both? Yes.
Oh, yeah,
yes.
We've got it all.
And wandering dew?
We did. Mm.
Yeah, the chickens took care of that pretty quickly.
Do they like wandering dew?
They love it.
Oh, fantastic. I know people who've got wandering dew right around under their house, so all they have to do is do a deal with some chicken farmer.
Get some chickens.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And we've had one or two neighbours come around with a plastic bag full of wandering dew from their property and thought that would help us feed the chooks, and it was quite nice and nice little way to get the neighbourhood into it.
Very good. Oh, that ties a lot of people together.
Yeah.
And so we're going on, because a lot of people at the moment need to get their veggies and their fruit trees all sorted so that we can have a bumper season this year. And so what are some of the things that you've got in your garden right now? And we want to be able to talk later on about how you work with the community of going to a local farmer's market and then sharing across the fence, etc. But could you lay out your garden? Just tell us and the listeners what you've got coming into the garden so that we know you've got all different types of beans and about four or five different types of lettuce and and celery. And
I think we've estimated about probably 500 or more bean plants to be going onto the property.
So they're growing now, they're just coming up out of the soil, and we've put some in some seedling trays so that we can sell them on to the community, because we know that they grow really well on the shore. We grew them, they were bumper crop last year, so we like to be able to try and test things and then say, hey, grow this, because we know it does.
Scarlet runners, or what are they?
Yeah, we've got, I think we saved about 3 scarlet runner seeds from last time round, but we've got a few different varieties, like the Dalmatian climbing bean.
Kentucky pole, Romany pole. Those are a couple of seeds that we got from a gardener's workshop we went down to at CCS Disability in Action in Royal Oak, and a lady passed them on, and they were gorgeous. They grew really prolifically.
Yeah, you definitely do those again.
Yeah, a couple of dwarfs, like a pink-seeded bush bean, which was a kwanga seed.
We've got a few different ones. We're also doing Bilotti bean as well, a later crop. After our garlic comes out, we'll be on the longest day of the year. We'll go with the tradition sometimes. So once that goes, the garlic comes out, we're putting in the Bilotti beans in. That'll be definitely a quick crop to come on, but it's a shell-out bean that you would dry or use fresh otherwise.
Really prolific, really prolific bushes.
Yeah, I think we grew about 16... the Bilotti beans, 16 plants last season, and we're still getting through it, so we thought we'd try a few more this time round, actually plant about 150 of them to see how we go.
And you've got all the land for it? Tight?
It's tight.
Yeah.
We can't grow everything.
Everything's maxed out at the moment.
It is. We have, I'm not exactly sure, it wouldn't be a quarter of an acre, it would probably be an eighth of an acre.
Yeah, there's some structures on there, some sheds there, like Jeff's got his workshop there, and a whole bunch of storage, and there's caravan on the site, and a small...
So we've got to work around all these structures and grow vertically and just grow intensively. And
so the sweet corn coming along?
Yes, we're growing corn.
I got my way. I've decided I wanted to have a bit of a guild, and so one of the more traditional permaculture things with grant combinations, I decided to put this out in the front garden because there's room out in the back anymore, to have the corn growing, which we planted I think just over a week ago now, or a couple of weeks ago now, and to have the pole beans to climb up the corn, to use them as stakes, and we're growing gherkin as a ground cover underneath it.
Good. This is all companion party.
It is. They like the same things. They're helping each other out in that respect. And
we use a lot of flowers as well.
Absolutely.
To attract the bees, although we have a beehive on site.
That's good.
Yeah.
That attract a few bees, definitely.
Yeah. A local woman has beehives that she dots around the suburbs, and so...
And people can contact this local woman, or is she just doing it just locally? She's not doing it, is it?
Yeah. I think it's locally, I'm not too sure.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're noticing obviously, that we've got so many more honeybees in our garden, because we've got a lot of lavender as well, a lot of lavender, lavender hedge. And the year that we've been there, a year and a bit, there was just really no bees. There's a lot of bumblebees, but no bees.
There's a few of them,
not a huge amount. So it's great to see them, and so we'll get pollination of our zucchinis a bit better this year.
Absolutely. Good now that the flowers are growing up for the spring and that as well, because the bees will be going straight down to Chelsea Sugar Factory about 2 kilometres away and, you know, giving us some nice, good sugar.
We've had a few swarms, so...
I see.
Yeah, in an urban situation, it's scary.
Swarms away from your area or towards your area?
From, I think, what they call the hive splitting, when there's too many queen bees and they decide to split up and one lot would go off and land in the macadamia tree and possibly in the neighbour's fence, but I think they were collected in a cardboard box.
It's magnificent the way they do it. It's a very exciting moment when you get out and see a swarm of bees and then have a beekeeper come and gather them.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's a very entertaining moment.
Super organism.
Yes.
It's delightful to have them in the garden.
Yes.
And soon we may have two, because I think she's bringing that cardboard box back into another hive on our property too. So, yeah, we'll have a few more.
So this year we're growing a lot more companion flowers like cleome and cornflower and calendula, of course, and heart's ease, which is self-seeding. They're going bananas.
Yeah, and there's always been yarrow around the place, which is a kind of a landing pad for the predatory wasp to land on there and attract them into the garden.
Comfrey flowers.
And does the wasp go for what, aphids or...?
Yeah, the aphids quite typically around the brassicas at the moment. They seem to get it done with them.
We don't do brassicas over summer now. We're not going to do it. We're not doing it. It's just too...
I agree.
Too tricky.
They take up too much room.
Too much room, and they get all diseased.
That's right.
That's when the butterflies are out, so...
Yes.
Can't be bothered.
Yeah.
So that means cabbages, cauliflower, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts. Well, Brussels sprouts are usually winter anyway, aren't they?
Yeah, and they don't really grow in Auckland. It's just not...
It's too warm.
Too warm. So we've got some seeds because we foolishly thought we could grow them. I'm sending them down to my old hometown in Southern Hawke's Bay, thank you very much, because they grow really well there.
Yeah, we'll just go visit them when it's coming
home. Yeah.
So all your seed, of course, you have received this from other organic gardens, so you'd have what you call heirloom seeds?
Yeah. We have bought a few in through, like, Collinger Gardens as a good source now. They've been helping us there.
And Running Brook Seed, which are an outfit out at Waiuku, and you see them at Clevedon Farmers Market. And they've got fabulous seeds. So I highly recommend you go to Clevedon Farmers Market, if not just to get some of those seeds.
Absolutely. They've got a small range, but it's really good what they do.
Really strong seeds.
Yeah. And we have a lot of success out of them.
Yeah.
Some of them we have saved over the few years that we have been gardening together and collecting a few things along the way. Always on the lookout for different cuttings and that sort of stuff to make free gardens for ourselves, basically.
I like the swath of seeds.
Yeah.
I find it's a ritual, and it's you're sharing and it's connecting with people and just the richness of life.
I agree. I agree. It's a sacred event, really.
It is.
Because we want the best and we want to be able to give the best.
Yeah. So I love the ritual at the end of summer, autumn, where it's getting a little bit colder and you're not so much out in the garden as much, and harvesting the dry seeds and winnowing them, and that's what I like to do in the evening. And the rocking chair.
It's television.
Spinning wheel.
Yes. I'm speaking with Darren Millington and Megan Baird about gardening, because they have put in what we would call a community garden here in Auckland, and they're learning, growing and sharing together. And as our garden grows, of course, I know that what I've always enjoyed, round about January to mid-January, when all the sweet corn, I've got the beans, the tomatoes, and then I've got my carrots. I haven't grown a lot of carrots. And all my lettuce, etc. And I can lay it all out, and then I can make one big meal with all the food. And you feel you're really connecting, because all the produce, and you look at it, it's a rainbow of colour. If you've got capsicums and, as I said, sweet corn and carrots, and then all your different greenery and your beetroot, and of course your radishes, it really makes a delightful looking meal. And of course you're just tasting the best.
Yes.
Absolutely.
We have a little barbecue and social area right next to the garden, so that we can take our produce that we gather at certain times when there's a bumper crop and make something right there and have a celebration and just enjoy what we've created. It's an essential part of gardening, I think, is to celebrate. To celebrate the seasons and just be with good friends.
Yeah, I do like the...
eat food!
Yeah.
The harvest time, it seems to be when the garden smiles back at you after all that hard effort that you put into it. It's a long haul to begin with when you're setting up. No doubt about it.
And to get to that harvest, of course, we've got to water our plants. And my concern was, I've always had a concern, here I am, got this lovely organic garden, and I've got a hose in my hand, and I know that there's chlorine and there's fluoride and there's other different chemicals in the water, and I feel a bit of a contradiction when I water my garden. However, how do you water your garden, and do you have drip feed or anything like that?
We have put in an irrigation system. I mean, it can get expensive in that respect, but we're using rainwater collected originally off a really small garage. We've now extended that to probably about a quarter of our roof of the house as well. But yeah, it's all going through. I've got an automatic timer, goes into dripper system, which is basically works like a grid pattern, where you've got all the drippers are 30 centimetres apart, and then all the dripper lines are 30 centimetres apart. So everywhere you plant in that grid system is going to be sufficient water.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's all underneath the mulch as well, so there's less evaporation. So we're trying to work out the best way to use the water wisely, and so we're not using too much.
Last year we did run out because Auckland is famously dry over summer, so we had to go on to mains supply.
Yeah, we do have that as backup, definitely.
Yeah, that is it's a backup. Now that we have the hen house, Jeff has fitted out just an open barrel, and we collect the water off the hen house, and we can just scoop a watering can and water our seedlings that way. We have our vegetable processing area that has a sink and a big bucket underneath that, which collects water, so we use that. So we're trying to use as many different devices so that we can collect as much rain, because when it rains in Auckland, famously, it rains heaps. So we want to try and collect as much as that as we can,
yeah,
so we can
absolutely.
Be a bit more efficient.
We've just connected up our cottage roof up to the water tanks as well, and in doing that, we're also going to use up one of our weed barrels, about a 200 litre drum plastic barrel there. We're going to attach that probably around about a metre off the ground, so we can collect all of the water, go into that first, and then fill up the tanks. But in doing that, we've always got a full tank in our courtyard,
so that we can water our personal courtyard garden that we have.
And the fact that it's a metre above the ground, it can naturally use that gravity to feed soaker hose through the tomato plants, and so we're not using the pumps in the courtyard there. And
we're incredibly lucky, because between the four of us, we have these specific skills that really add to the pot something unique and strong. So Jeff is this master builder, and he can just whip things up in a second.
Yes, the infrastructure man.
He is the infrastructure man, and he does it of such high quality and grace and beauty. And Darren's as smart with the garden, so it's great.
And herbs, you've got a wide range of herbs?
Certainly.
Yeah, we've got a few. Always been interested in collecting herbs. I used to be a member of the Herb Society in Tauranga.
And Linda has always grown herbs out the back as well and in the front, and she makes the best herbal teas in the world.
Can you name a couple of the herbal teas?
Oh, she does a fabulous one. She collects some calendula flowers and some yarrow. Oh, and she does a really great nettle and mint one as well. So it's lovely to watch Linda just go out to the garden and pick a few herbs, maybe a little lemon balm, maybe a little yarrow, and throw it in the pot, and it's delightful.
Yeah, kind of
it's fresh,
ritualistic, and
it is.
Sort of dresses out of garden meetings sometimes, sort of like that. It's quite nice.
Mm. I'm very interested in the variety or the wide range of leafy greens you could have in your salad. Sure, I want to put capsicum, and I want a great beetroot and great carrot, have your tomato and snow peas, etc. Do you have a nice wide range of leafy greens?
We've got a few things we can go out and forage on and bring back for the garden.
We have that perennial area. It was this wild area that was gardened in the past with potatoes, and there was some form of structure, but after a while it just got overgrown with all this greenery. So there's this rocket self-seeding constantly. There's chickweed, which a lot of people see as a weed.
It's good, isn't it?
It's good, isn't it?
In winter, chickweed seems to really thrive.
Yeah.
And I used to go out and just grab a whole handful, and I think, wow, nobody sees this as a benefit. Because, I don't know if you know, there's a guy called Don Tolman who comes down from the States, and he understands the signatures of plants. And what they found out, that there's about 3,000 different chemicals in a spinach, and we've only been able to really quantify 150 of them. But all these chemicals are actually inside the chlorophyll of all these plants. So when we eat a huge array of, see, sometimes I might have 12 to 14 leafy vegetables or vegetables in my salad. And of course I'm chomping all through that and I'm juicing them right down with my molars. And so I'm extracting all the goodness. And of course it has to make our vehicle, our body, extremely healthy. Have you got any thoughts on that?
Oh, I think so. I've got an example. My sister lives in Canada, so please, Anna, don't get offended. She had been in South Korea for a year teaching English, and her digestive system slowed down somewhat. And we met up in Australia, in Western Australia, to go woofing together, and we went to a community, and there's a lot of leafy greens, and we were eating lots of fresh, delicious food. And she was living in a city, you know, urban Korea, and probably wasn't getting that freshness. And tell you what, digestive system was sorted. So I can attest to it. And Anna can too. So, yeah, we do have a lot of greens. We do.
Also lots of other colours as well, you would say, for the salads too. I mean, there's, we've got the calendula and the heartsease that go into the salads.
The edible pansies. Sorrel. Yeah. Sorrels are good.
That one doesn't seem to need much encouragement to grow in the garden at all. It's one of those perennial greens.
Which one?
Sorrel.
Sorrel, okay. Yeah.
Tastes like oxalis.
Yes.
You know, that sour, sour salt.
Yeah, a bit of a tang to it. It's
but it's tough, Ed. Yeah.
And do you bring people into your gardens and show them off?
Oh, yeah, I love showing it off. We always get people from the neighbourhood having a quite curious and sort of wanted to see what we're doing, because name gets out there, I think, because, well, Jeff and Linda know a lot of people. They've been there some time and got a lot of friends that are interested in what we're doing.
And that's what we want. We want it to be a demonstration garden, an inspiration, coming together of people. We're happy to have workshops there, and there's enough space for that to happen, and we want neighbours' children to come and hang out with the chickens.
Absolutely.
And gather the eggs. And because we do the Birkenhead Artesian Market once a month, so.
And so this is the local farmers market, is that right?
It's sort of. It's more, there's more local crafts. We've been there twice now. The first time we went there was in December, and that was ad hoc, and we just thought it was a good idea, and we just wanted to meet people.
I think we actually made enough to cover store fees.
The first
and
time
a cup
around.
Of coffee.
So this time round we were a bit more strategic, and we planned for it about a month, 6 weeks in advance, so that we knew what we were growing and that we would have enough to grow. So it was last Saturday, and we had a great response, and we want to do it again.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the stall itself, I mean, we were started off thinking we were going to be having a more of a farm gate stall, but we thought we would tap into the local farmers market and with the local market there, just because you encourage the community.
And how many veggies did you have to sell? Different varieties? 10, 15, 20?
We didn't have a large variety. We had three varieties of tomato, one variety of basil, three or four varieties of capsicum, two varieties of zucchini, and three different types of flowers.
And you had capsicum and tomatoes growing now?
Yes.
We have been preparing it. Well, I've been preparing the soil for a few months now. I mean, I started off with a tomato bed, and which was our old squash bed, I think. We had a mound of squash last season, so I broke that down to turn into a tomato bed and grew a whole bunch of mustard as a green crop in there. And when that was got up to a nice height, I chopped that in and then covered it with a bit of plastic and over some hoops just to warm the soil up as well. And we've been using cold frames made out of old window sash. I think that Jeff had lying around in the shed, and So you get the seeds up a little bit early, and then we can, now that the soil's warmed up enough, I think we can actually plant them into the garden.
So we sowed a lot of these seeds in August, late August, because we had those cold frames, so we had that greenhouse-type system, so they were kept warm. I mean, if we put the seeds straight into the soil, they would have died because it would have been too cold, and they would have got blight or something like that. So they're still being nursed at the moment, so we were able to meet the demand at the right time in October when people are looking for tomatoes. Yeah.
Yes, because I'm interested in you being a little microcosm and sharing your ideas and having other people in Auckland. And of course I know that the Manukau City and the County's District Health Board are doing their best to stamp out diabetes, and have got a group of people pulling different cultural groups. Mm. I think they're looking at around about 17 groups in that particular region, putting in little localised gardens on city council land, where yours is on private land.
Yeah.
This is the excitement to be able to get people involved.
Yeah, it's an exciting time for productive food gardening. There's a lot of community gardens starting, or they've already started. And in Manukau, for example, he said the driver has been health, local food, nutritious food, so it's linked to obesity and the lower socioeconomic need for good food. So that's the real driver down there. And when you see a North Shore city, it's a little bit different. There's a lot of private gardeners. There are some community gardens popping up. Of course, Framework Trust has had that Devonport garden for a long, long time, and Kalmana and Grey Lynn have been around for a long, long time. They've had ongoing funding, which was always a help for community gardens. There's a small one started up about a year or so ago. It's called Cambria Organic Gardens. It's down in Devonport. And through Darren's work at the Kaipatiki Environment Centre on the shore, he's been in touch with loads of people who have been wanting to start gardens, churches, AUT, and
yeah, it's a few combinations of people. Like, I think that particular one was a woman's...
The women's centre.
Yeah, women's centre, and a church for using or helping each other sort of realise a dream, and a place where people can go and actually be busy and heal themselves through gardening, and a bit of a remembrance kind of a garden as well, and you know, for the church to have involved. And
yes, because the church have got the land, haven't they?
They do.
Everywhere, all over Auckland, there's all these churches sitting on just green grass. Well, you can whack in a whole lot of rows of everything. Well, not necessarily rows, but just heaps of stuff. And because Christianity maintains we come from the garden, well, why not put a garden in so that you are still in the garden?
Here we go. Yeah. I feel like our garden's a paradise. Yes. So there's just so much energy out there for food growing at the moment. So it's a great time to be doing this. And with things like this, there are all these people out there that have been gardening all their lives, and they can't wait to share their experiences and skills with other people. So there's all these people waiting for the chance. And
oh, absolutely. I'm sure there's lots of resources out there as well. That these old gardeners would also have old trees and that sort of stuff that we probably get cuttings. And yeah, that can be furthered around the community, I believe. I know there's people out there doing things like fruit tree mapping for the local areas, and just so you can have, I think there's a website out there, I'm not too sure who started it, but it's one you can work out where all the fruit trees are and all the harvesting times. And
on public land. Yeah, yeah. It's a Google map. There was an article in the Herald a couple of weeks ago about it. And there's social networking sites like Ubi that have started up around out of your own backyard, and there's just a real energy at the moment. And there are examples all over the world of great community gardens, great community gardening cities like Melbourne, and there's great ones in Brisbane, and even South Australia and Vancouver, and America is having a real resurgence because of the recession. And
yes, in Santa Monica down Venice Beach in Los Angeles, when I first got there way back in 1976, it was fantastic. You could see everybody with their beans in their corn, and they had big huge sunflowers, and they had their flags in the gardens. It was just a delight to feel as you walked around and looked at them.
Yes, it's what I love about community gardening out in public space. It's that pride, it's civic pride and that ownership of public space. And I find it's a little bit lacking in certain areas of Auckland. We all come home from work and go back to our house, and maybe we do all our gardening invisibly, And I'd just like to see it brought out into the public realm a bit more so that people are inspired and want to be out on the street and out of their cars and talking to people. And I feel like food is, it's sort of fundamental to social connection in cities.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I think we can work around the food itself and to bring the community together.
Mm. Last weekend I had somebody said, I decided to put my garden in the front of the section.
Yay.
And they said, wow. Everyone was looking over, we were talking, we were sharing, I was meeting all these people I'd never met, and they were learning stuff from me. And this is the way to go, particularly if your garden is somewhat sort of neat and you've got it all worked out. And when you look at it, you think, wow, these people have really, it's an artistic piece.
Isn't it? Oh, that's part of my motivation for gardening is real aesthetic vision. I like things to look beautiful, and you can make productive food gardening look beautiful. I mean, these are beautiful plants, especially when you intercrop with flowers. So that's Linda and I's skill in our communal garden, is that we bring in the aesthetic. We bring in the need for it to look pretty and to elicit joy.
And to have that bounty.
Yes.
Just springing through it all the time.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'd like to cover quickly farmers' markets. So I interviewed a farmer, one of the people up north at Pongare, and they say this is a huge market. I haven't been to it, but it's very, very exciting for a lot of people. Yes, it's got a gigantic following. And then, of course, I also close to the Matakana markets. It's a very small, but it's extremely cute, and you'd honestly think it was a medieval market, the way they've set it up. It's fantastic. And you talk about Clevedon. Can you tell about other markets that are around? Of course, even Avondale Racecourse, it's a pretty basic market, but there's evidently 20,000 people possibly go through
there. Yeah, it's a huge one. Well, there's always the Takapuna market, which is a bit of a mix of flea market, and there's, if you know where to go, there are some organic food growers that are selling their wares there. And
I think there's another monthly one in Beach Haven as well.
That's not so much a farmer's market though. Auditea, we met in South Australia, it's out of Adelaide, about 5 kilometres south of McLaren Vale, in a tiny little place called Wallunga, and that has a locally famous farmer's market. And that's where all the people pour in from the city to delight in the locally produced food. It's a very food productive, rich place. Olives and wine and deli delights and vegetables. And of course, all over the country, you know, Hawke's Bay and Nelson, and they're just all popping up like mushrooms.
That's right. And it means community. It's cohesive. And of course, transition towns are working through that, as well as Ubi out of our own backyards. And so it's to basically ignite the whole country to come together via food, via organics, health, vitality, joy. So where do you see this all going?
It's going to take over the world. We're going to need to grow our own food at some stage. And it's becoming more and more accessible, and it's more and more out there. It's in the media more. The threads are being re-sewn. I mean, two generations ago, it was just normal. And in the last two generations, the threads have been broken. So we're re-sewing it. We're all re-sewing it.
That's right. I think because we're turning off our television and getting outside.
Totally. Well, I think that's not hard these days with what's on TV.
Very true. So I'm extremely optimistic of how things are coming in our own backyard, growing things. And we just trust that we can then share it across the fence.
Absolutely. Let's share it across the fence.
Let's break down the fences.
Better idea.
Well, we don't need to really lock everything down like that. I do agree. It's when we can be mindful of other people, have respect, and work together as community, we can be happy.
Happy and resilient.
Yes. Darren, Megan, thank you so much for coming and sharing your enthusiasm. This is wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.